Hi, this is Michael Pfeiffer. This is another episode of Metal Conversations. In this episode, I'll discuss some of the microscopic structures present in metals, why they are important to metal properties, and how they form and how they are modified to get the desired properties. First, we'd like to start off with just a general discussion about things going on here and also some current projects. First of all, I know it's been a while since my last Metal Conversations episode. I've been pretty busy and been on vacation. I went on a trip to Alaska with my wife and friends. I'll explain about that trip at the end of the podcast. If, for those of you who are interested to hear it, if you're looking for ideas for vacations, it was a great vacation. And also been just really busy with work and also just trying to come up with ideas for this podcast. I decided that, you know, to try to make the podcast more interesting, I would start talking about some of the things that I'm working on, for projects, in addition to talking about the topic that, you know, for that particular episode, and occasionally mixing in some personal things when appropriate. I thought that might help just add more interesting things to the podcast. So before I get into the discussion about the microscopic structures, I want to talk a little bit about some current projects I'm working on. So there's three projects I'll talk about. The first project I just got done working on actually was a failure analysis of some steel components that were fracturing when the equipment that they were on was being transported. This was interesting because these are parts that had about a 1% failure rate, and so that most of the time the parts were working fine. But this was something that kind of appeared out of the blue and has been going on for a period of time. First step of the failure analysis was to look at the samples they had and select the samples for analysis. So for the failure analysis, it did visual examination of the fracture surfaces, also did scanning electron microscopy of the fracture surfaces, and then looked at the metallography, metallurgy of the parts. So that involved looking at measuring its composition, looking at the microstructure, measuring the hardness. And the results indicated that the parts had been failing due to fatigue, and the fatigue was happening while the parts were installed on equipment and the equipment was being transported. And so the parts were somehow vibrating and resulting in fatigue cracks forming and growing in the samples. And then the cracks would eventually get large enough where the parts would just break due to overload. The metallurgical analysis results, the composition, microstructure, and hardness, indicated that there's nothing metallurgically wrong with the components. So it met its composition requirements, had the right microstructure. It was a ferrite cementite microstructure or a ferrite perlite microstructure, and the hardness was within spec. So the conclusion was that, at least for the people that were manufacturing the component, there was nothing that they were doing wrong, and a discussion needed to be had with people whose equipment it was being used in to understand if the parts were being held in differently and if they're exposed to vibration that was putting the material, and the material might have just been at the design edge for the vibration to which it was exposed, and that certain parts were going to fail due to exposure to the vibration conditions during transportation. So what I'm saying in a roundabout way is that it may have even been a design issue where just by having normal variations of the part properties and microstructure, that sometimes the material would be susceptible to cracking due to fatigue, due to the vibrations. The next project is helping to select aluminum alloys for an impact application. This is a really interesting project because my client wanted to select different aluminum alloys that were different ranges of properties in order to be used for impact. And this involved understanding the application, the requirements for the application in terms of strength, weight, also how the parts were going to be fabricated, and we had to consider different strengths and also what forms the different aluminum alloys might be available. We needed material that was in the form of bar or rod for fabricating the components. So with that information, I was able to identify a few different alloys that can be tested out for using in the application. And the final project is failure analysis of an electrical part. This is something that worked on last week. This is a small electrical part that may have been involved in causing a fire. And we're looking at the part with a scanning electron microscope. I was expecting the exam to last just 2 hours, and ended up being lasting about 5 hours, which ended up being kind of grueling because there was a lot of thinking for a long time. And to think about how to analyze the part in the scanning electron microscope and the data to collect. The parts also needed to be cleaned every once in a while in order to remove contamination. And then the other thing too was trying to figure out where the different elements that were present on the part were coming from. And so we had to do some engineering to figure that out as well. Hopefully from that, just from that scanning electron microscope exam for 5 hours, hopefully we got enough information that will help understand how the part behaved when it was being used and prior to it failing. The next thing, the next non-microscopic structure thing I'll mention is, I recently had a trip to Alaska. We went to Seward. It was incredible. The scenery there was great. We did lots of different things. I'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. So for those of you who are not interested, you don't have to listen to it. But for those of you who are looking for things to do on vacation, listen to it. It was a great trip. So now I'm going to talk about microscopic structures. Understanding metallurgy requires being able to think small, meaning on the scale of a hundredth or a thousandth of a millimeter, sometimes on the scale of atoms. And the reason for this is that there are microscopic structures and microscopic processes present in metal or occur in metal that have a huge influence on metal properties. And just because we can't see these structures and processes with the naked eye doesn't mean it's okay to ignore them. In fact, if you ignore them, it's going to be at your peril because you can end up getting materials that don't have the structures needed, and as a result, you don't get the properties you need for a particular application. So the things I'm going to be talking about today are grains, phases, and diffusion. I'm also going to use the word microstructure because it's just familiar for me to use. Microstructure refers to the microscopic structures present in metals, with the grain structure and the phases present in the metals. Diffusion is a microscopic process that occurs inside of metals. So the first thing that people have to recognize is that in a metal, the atoms are arranged in a periodic arrangement. The periodic arrangement can vary from metal to metal and within different phases within a metal. I'm getting ahead of myself, but we can have different periodic arrangements, but regardless, the atoms are arranged in a periodic arrangement in metals. Now, we can have a single crystal metal, which ideally has the atoms arranged in a periodic arrangement in all three directions throughout the entire piece of metal. And it's the same arrangement, and it's unbroken in the idealized situation in all three directions throughout the entire component. And that would be a single crystal, but single crystals really only are used for a few applications. More than 99% of the metals out there are not single crystal. They are polycrystalline, which means many grained. There are many grains within a metal, and each grain is its own crystal. That is, the atoms are arranged in a periodic arrangement throughout the grain. And grains are microscopic. They're measured in tenths of a millimeter, or hundredths of a millimeter, or a thousandth of a millimeter. From grain to grain, we can have the same arrangement of atoms, but because each grain forms independently, the atomic structure is rotated from one grain to the next, which is why we have the different grains. And then the areas between these rotated structures are what we call grain boundaries. We can modify the grain structure and size in order to modify metal strength and other properties, impact strength, creep resistance, and also can influence orange peel. And we can modify grain structure either using cold working and combined with heat treating. Once I worked on a project, it was a thin metal sheet. Components were being pushed over a shaft. So there was a hole in the sheet, in the thin sheet, and the parts were being pushed over a shaft. And sometimes the shaft was being scratched, or it was actually not sometimes, it was with one particular lot of the thin metal components. The shaft was getting scratched, and the thin metal components were bending. So we got samples of the components that were causing a problem, and also got a samples of components that were from a batch where there wasn't a problem. We did the measure the composite, evaluated the composition of the material, looked at the microstructure, at the grain structure, and also measured the hardness. And it turned out that the samples that were causing a problem had very small grains compared to the samples that did not have a problem. We know that small grain material has higher strength than a larger grain material. And it turns out that the bad parts, which had the very small grains, also had a higher hardness, and therefore higher strength compared to the larger grain material. What had happened is that during the process to make the sheet metal, the material was cold rolled and then annealed. And there was a problem during the annealing in that either the temperature wasn't high enough or the time wasn't long enough. And as a result, the grains were smaller than expected. So that's another example of where a failure analysis was used to understand the metallurgy of a part and understand why it was caused, what the problems were due to. So we can modify grain structure but through using cold working and heat treating. The next microscopic structure that I want to discuss is phases. In a metal, there can be different phases present. A phase is a material, and it's comprised of the elements in an alloy. So depending on the alloy, we can have one phase or two phases or three or more phases. A phase is defined by its crystal structure, that is the way the atoms in that phase are arranged, and the composition of the phase. For example, in steel, there can be two phases present, ferrite and cementite. Ferrite is a relatively low strength phase, and cementite has high strength and high hardness. Ferrite has a certain arrangement of atoms and a certain composition. It's mainly iron with a very small amount of carbon mixed in. And cementite is a compound of iron and iron and carbon. There's for every three iron atoms, there's one carbon atom. And cementite also has a different arrangement of atoms compared to ferrite. The difference in arrangement of atoms and the differences in composition give rise to the different properties between ferrite and cementite. Well, a steel that contains both ferrite and cementite is basically a composite material, where the steel is a composite of the ferrite and cementite properties mixed together. We can modify the relative amounts of ferrite and cementite present in the steel by using by adding different amounts of carbon to the steel, and also by using different heat treatments. For any particular alloy, we can use alloy composition and heat treating to modify the phases that are present. We can also modify the relative amounts, their size, and their shape. And all of these features of the phases in a metal influence a metal's properties. So going back to the steel, we have ferrite and cementite. If more carbon is added to the steel, then that results in more cementite forming in the steel compared to ferrite, and that makes the steel stronger and harder. We can also take the steel with any particular alloy composition and use different heat treatments on it to modify the shape of the cementite, which results in changes to the steel's mechanical properties and also to its ease of machining and other properties. The next thing I want to talk about is diffusion. Diffusion refers to the motion of atoms through a metal. If the temperature of a metal is high enough, the atoms in that metal can move around. The higher the temperature, the faster that the atoms are able to move around. So what the atoms do is they jump from one position to another position within the metal. And as temperature increases, the speed of atom motion through a metal increases. Also, the other important factor is the time. The longer the time at a particular temperature, the more time that the atoms have to move around. The important thing about diffusion is that diffusion results in changes to the microstructure of a metal. It results in the changes to the phases that are present, their shape, and their relative amounts. It also influences the grain size. So it's important to select and control a heat treating temperature and time in order to get the desired changes to occur in the metal, in order to get the desired microstructure, that is the desired grain structure or desired phases and amounts of phases and their relative sizes and shape, in order to get the desired properties, because it's important to recognize that the properties of a metal depend on the microstructure. So we're using heat treating and also cold working in some cases to modify the microstructure of a metal in order to get specific properties. So the properties just don't come out of nowhere. They come from modifying these microscopic structures. So we have to select and control the temperature in order to get the desired microstructure. Conversely, if we don't select and control the right temperature and time for a heat treatment, and also don't control the alloy composition, then we won't get the desired microstructure in a metal, and then we won't get the desired properties in the metal. So I know lots of people get stuck on understanding and being able to conceptualize these microscopic structures. And I think one of the reasons is just experience. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and lots of other metallurgists too. And so we're very comfortable conceptualizing the changes that occur on a microscopic level during heat treatment and during cold rolling. In fact, in my mind, when I'm thinking about heat treating and the changes that occur, I can see the changes occurring. I'm thinking both about atom motion as well as the changes to the phases present and to the grain structure. And that just comes with experience. And I remember when I was in undergrad and in grad school, a lot of the stuff was also kind of abstract to me because I just didn't have enough experience working with heat treating and understanding the phases present and understanding the relationship between the microstructure and alloy composition and heat treating and cold working or cold rolling a metal. But with experience and more time as a metallurgist, I became comfortable with all these different things. And I think that what's important is for people not to think they have to be an expert at them, but I think just have a basic understanding of microstructure and diffusion and the atoms in a metal and heat treating and other processing, just so that they can have a decent discussion with metallurgists and customers and suppliers, so that they just have a good sense of what can be done metallurgically to bring about changes to a metal to give improvements, or what needs to be considered when there's a problem and how to go about getting the information needed to fix the problem. And, you know, the final analogy I have is, you know, this is understanding these microscopic structures is kind of like understanding the cells in our bodies. We can't see them or feel them going and all the different processes going on inside of our body, but we know they're important. But having some basic knowledge of them is important in order to have discussions with doctors, in order to help make decisions when our health is at issue. So that's it for the discussion about microscopic structures. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you think about this episode. Also, feel free to email. Let me know about other topics to consider talking about. Thanks for listening. I'll try to get an episode out soon. And after this episode is done, I'll talk briefly about the Alaska vacation. Okay, well, if you're still here, so now I'll talk about the Alaska vacation. First of all, I've been to Hawaii and seen the mountains in Colorado, and being in Alaska is a totally different experience. We flew into Anchorage and then took a four-hour train ride from Anchorage to Seward. Seward is on the southwest part of Alaska. We picked one spot because Alaska is a really big state and there's a lot of things you can do, and we just wanted to pick one spot and focus our time on doing things rather than traveling all over the state. Four-hour train ride, and we chose to go inside of the train car that had full glass windows and also a glass ceiling, so you can see all the way around. And also we can go outside at the back of our car. We can actually be outside. And so we're able to see the landscape all the way from Anchorage to Seward, and basically just passing through mountains and going by streams, and it's beautiful. So Seward is located on a fjord. A fjord is a bay that's been carved out by glaciers. So people were saying that the bay was about, like, you know, 700 or 900 feet deep. The town is surrounded by mountains. We did a day boat ride out from the bay onto the Gulf of Alaska, and we saw sea otters, sea lions, seals. Didn't see any whales. It wasn't the right time for seeing whales. We did see porpoises. They were going along with our boat. We had one day where we did kayaking on the bay, and the final day was a hike, great hike on the Lost Lake Trail. And we only did a portion of it, but it was still beautiful along the trail and where we stopped at. We stopped at about 2 miles in. Only one other thing we saw was Exit Glacier, which is there's a national park. Exit Glacier is a glacier you can get within a couple hundred feet of it just by hiking into the park. Going into the park, they have signs showing different dates corresponding to where the glacier was. So the first date we encountered before we got to the park was 1805, and then it was like 1840, and 1860, and 1870, and 1899, and so on. And as we got closer and closer to the glacier, we saw the dates approaching our current date. The 1805 date was about 3 miles away from where the glacier currently is. And the 2005 sign, that's at the point where you're standing right by the glacier, and that's probably a couple hundred feet from the glacier. So it's just showing how the glacier has receded over time. Everything was beautiful. It was well worth the trip, and had a lot of fun. And the weather was great. It was in the mid 50s, and we got lucky where it didn't rain during the day. So if you get a chance to go to Alaska, Seward is a great place to go and visit.